Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service, providing insider news and knowledge to investors. His website, CanadianInsider.com, home of the Canadian Insider Club. Welcome back to the show, Ted.
Jim, it's great to be back, and thanks for everybody tuning in.
Ted, you have an update on the BRICS proposed currency and its possible impact on gold.
That's right. Well, when we talked last, I mentioned we were going to do an overview for people on the CanadianInsider.com website, and that is up there. It's called "Will the BRICS Countries Come Together in One Unit? Why Gold and Gold Miners May Win in a Multinodal World." So that is up there for everyone to take a look. And I should also add, by the way, we have also implemented the free intro registration on CanadianInsider.com, so you can check that out and get a few free access to some free features on CanadianInsider, including a starter watch list. So check that out as well if you're checking out the document, the blog post on this BRICS currency unit called the Unit. And I talked a little bit about it in the last program, but just to refresh everyone on it, essentially what the proposal is to have a blockchain-based currency that is backed 40% gold and 60% by the participating currencies. So it's kind of a brilliant mix in that it has this currency that's anchored in gold, but it also allows participation for countries like, you know, India, if they participate in Brazil. And essentially, to cut a long story short, it allows them to use their own currencies in international trade without these currencies actually leaving the country. So there's kind of like a magic mix in there, and we talk about it in our gold top 20 mining report that we published on July 25th called Global Gold Producers Take the Lead, and we get into a little bit of the details about how that works, how it would, the unit, the BRICS currency unit proposal, and it's still basically at the pilot stage right now. It's not operating viable at the viable project stage. It is at the pilot stage. So, but if it, you know, moves forward and gets off the ground, it would be interesting because you could have countries like India being able to use their rupees in trade. And right now, for example, they have been using them to some extent, and countries like Russia, I believe, have been accepting rupees for their oil. But then what does Russia do with the rupees? And so the unit formula fixes this, being able to put some of these rupees back on deposit to get this other currency in exchange. So it's a brilliant idea. Now we'll have to see if the BRICS go for it. We may get more clarity on that in October when we have the BRICS summit in Russia. They're hosting it this year, and I expect them that they will review where they're going on BRICS currency. Now, this is a great development for the gold miners for a couple of reasons. Not only does it increase the demand for gold once the unit would get set up, and we explain that in the blog post, but there's another more subtler reason, and that would include having investors understand that the current gold price levels are, you know, more or less sustainable, in that this hasn't just been a one-off situation that's kind of, that the gold price has kind of flown up here and it's going to come tumbling back down. I mean, of course, you're going to have volatility, and that's not to say that, you know, couldn't go back below 2000 or that's not to say that, but just the general trend for gold should be supportive by the BRICS if they adopt the unit as their BRICS currency, or alternatively, if they don't adopt the unit and they go with the central bank digital currencies, which they're also testing out right now, then that also would support gold, because for countries like India or, you know, Brazil, Russia, to have their CBDCs accepted in trade, you want the counterparties to have some assurance that the currency is not going to depreciate, you know, while you wait around and, you know, find something to do with it, right? So having stronger gold reserves backing your currency is one way to strengthen that central bank digital currency. So ironically, even if the unit is not, even if they do not go forward with the unit, they're then likely to go at, along the lines of using the CBDC, the central bank digital currency. But even that would require or encourage gold reserve accumulation to support the currency. So the trend for gold here is, I think, generational, in that we've had some major developments now amongst this major block, the BRICS block, that gold is playing an important role. And that is a lot different than 10 years ago, where gold was basically seen as a hedge against central bank policy errors, which it still is, but there was not this new system, payment system developing that had gold as a major piece in it. So the entire environment for gold, I think, over the next 10, 20 years is improving. And why that's important is because for the gold miners, that their reserves that they work so hard at delineating and, you know, exploring for, those should be valued, have higher value put on them by investors as investors start to understand and believe that the gold price, you know, is basically on a strong footing here, and, you know, that we're at levels that are, you know, more or less sustainable over the next decade. Again, that's not to say that they're going to always go up or that they can't go down, but that there's going to be this important role for gold in a major geoeconomic bloc, the BRICS, which are growing, and which there are a number of countries that are looking to join them as well. So it's looking pretty good for the gold industry. You know, it's been a very volatile decade for resource investors. We had a lithium boom and bust, and thanks in part to, I think there was a lot of production that came online from China and Chinese companies, and then the EV adoption rates fell, thanks in part to, you know, the botched policies of the Biden, you know, Schultz and Trudeau governments, where they've allocated a lot of money to the energy transition, but they haven't delivered many results. So I think the EV transition moves on, but at a slower pace, and I'll be surprised now if they ever hit their targets that they've set out, because there just hasn't been the execution on the government side, and we're likely to have a Trump administration. I mean, it's not guaranteed, of course. Lots can happen between now and November, but they will not be enthusiastically pushing electric vehicle mandates. And so that's, you know, one large market that will not be providing a lot of growth. They'll be providing some growth. I don't think they're going to stop EV adoption. But anyway, I mean, the point is that the lithium potential has been basically scuttled, I think, due to poor policy execution by those very proponents who, you know, have been telling us we have a climate emergency. But now that's seems to have changed. We now have a China overcapacity emergency, and for some, apparently, that's more important than saving the planet for these people now. So, Yeah, so the poor EV industry and the poor taxpayers are, you know, basically left holding the bag now that you've basically had this botched effort on the U.S., Canadian, and EU governments on the EU transition. So maybe EU will press ahead, maybe they'll get their act together. But, you know, when you've got the North American market saying we basically don't want EVs to, you know, anymore, we will build them at our own pace, and when we get around to it, when we figure out how to do it, then we'll offer EVs to our citizens. And in the meantime, we are going to keep in Canada, we're going to keep taxing them, of course, at the pump, because we want them to drive EVs. But on the other hand, we're not giving them EVs to drive, so we're not giving them affordable EVs to drive. So you see who's holding the bag here, and it's not our members of parliament, by the way, who I understand are getting $200,000 a year as a base salary. So they're not holding the bag, but we'll be holding the bag on this botched EV policy. Lithium investors are holding the bag because you know, just hasn't been the uptake in the EV market. But I think, you know, gold, we're talking about a monetary system development. It's a lot more glacial, which is, you know, good in the sense that it should be a longer, more sustainable bull run here, and it won't be incumbent upon any kind of, well, it will be incumbent definitely on the BRICS moving forward. If the BRICS do not move forward and fall, if the BRICS determination to advance local currencies falls apart, well then, yeah, that would be a headwind for gold, and you know, because one of the major support factors would disappear. So, and you may have some selling if the BRICS kind of unwind. I mean, that is a big risk. But so far, and that's why I'm giving this update here, that, you know, things are moving ahead. And, you know, so we're going to keep a close eye on it on Canadian Insider. And in our top 20 mining report, we keep a close eye on how this BRICS project to promote local currencies is unfolding.
Now, government policies have forced more people to use transit in Vancouver because we have the highest gasoline prices in North America due to taxation. However, they're saying they may have to cut transit services by 50% because they're not making as much money as they used to on gasoline taxes. Is this insanity at work?
Well, the problem, too, is that you know, a number of people are now working from home, or they've withdrawn from the labor force, or, you know, if you're a new arrival in Canada, and you know that this has been the policy of choice by the Trudeau government, is to spur economic growth by bringing in more people into the country, you know, it takes a while before you can afford to buy a car and fill it up at these prices. So, you know, our policy mix and just societal changes, you know, are not providing as much gas tax revenue, and but policymakers should have seen this coming a while ago, particularly, you know, with their EV quota mantra. I mean, this should have been thought about a long time ago. But again, you know, we've got this, you know, Canadians, I think, they're very busy, you know, just surviving in this economic climate. But I hope they take a few minutes to ask, what are they getting? You know, in the next election, they're going to be told, oh, you should vote. What are you getting for this person who is, you know, going to cost you $300,000 a year when you throw in all the benefits? Like, how are they performing for you? What are they delivering? And I have to say, I'm very disappointed and discouraged by the quality of public policy that's been coming out of Ottawa. And, you know, I think, the Trudeau government takes the big blame for that. But, you know, I think the whole MPs as a, the whole system, the whole MP system, you know, they all have a stake in doing better policy. You know, and I guess we had a step in the right direction where we got a new changes to the Competition Act, but of course, the $200,000 a year MPs didn't catch this last minute amendment. This includes the Conservatives, where they basically made it very risky. I'll use the word risky for any oil and gas company to talk about its climate policies, because basically if the government if somebody in the public complains about what you've written and some bureaucrat decides, oh, well, you know, you're lying, you know, the penalties are quite severe. So what's been the response of the oil and gas industry? Well, we're not going to talk about climate change. I mean, so this is our $200,000 a year member of parliament, members of parliament at work. Okay. And I give the whole group right now a failing grade, because I think if you're getting paid that kind of money, you got to deliver the goods. And Canadians there's been no goods delivered except hardship and failure, policy failures. And they all have to collectively should be shameful of that. And they should all be working doubly hard to regain the trust and confidence of voters. But if the voters don't care, and the voters don't say anything, well, the voters are going to get what, you know, the voters kind of, you know, facilitate, which will be more of the same. And yes, we may have a change in government coming up, but again, we will have to see how that all unfolds. There's many different scenarios that are coming up in the election. A conservative majority, I suspect, could offer very different policy outcomes than a conservative minority. A conservative minority would make it very difficult for any kind of substantive change to happen, in my opinion. And you never know. But again, if these MPs decide they're going to work for their money and deliver the goods for Canadians, we could all be surprised. But based off of the track record I've seen over the past 4 to 6 years, the track record's pretty pathetic. Ted, how can you say that? How can you say that you're just being, you know, grumpy? Yeah, I am being grumpy, because when you look at the per capita GDP growth in Canada, it's been falling. So yes, I'm grumpy, but I'm not the only one who's grumpy about it. And I'm grumpy that our MPs are getting paid that kind of money and delivering those kind of results. And I have every right to be grumpy about that, and so does every other Canadian. So it's time for the politicians to come to the plate, and it's time for them to change the discourse and stop blaming the people for being upset and being angry. It's up to them. They're the ones that are being paid the big bucks, and these are big bucks they're getting paid, and they need to all do a better job.
Canada's federal politicians are the second highest paid in the world, second only to the U.S., but Canada is only the 10th the size of the U.S. Should they only get 10th the pay of American politicians?
I've heard the EU politicians do pretty well, too. So I'm not sure about those numbers, Jim. I think it's safe to say they all take care of themselves, and that in the West, politics has become an industry, and the people have become the product. And it's completely evolved from over the last 50 years. And now it's all about the money. It's all about the money, about who gets the patronage, who gets the government contracts. You know, think about the Arrival Canada app, right? That's what our Western democratic system has become. And I get a pushback from people on that. I go, well, then you show me where it's been delivering for me, you know? And I'm not talking about, you know, a handout here or there, you know, a rebate here and a rebate there. I'm talking about overall outcomes for Canadians. And I just don't see too many good overall outcomes right now. And, if we were firing on all cylinders and we had good per capita growth, fine, take your $200,000 a year. You know, everybody's better off. But that's not the case. The politicians are better off, and the average Canadian is worse off. So something's got to change.
We'll have more with Ted Dixon right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Ted Dixon. Ted, the Bank of Canada just did its second rate cut of 0.25%. The U.S. Fed has yet to cut rates. When do you think they will, and what kind of an impact will these rate cuts have?
Well, good question. You know, The Fed has, I think, been playing a risky game here with the U.S. economy. Now, they, on the one hand, you have this massive government deficit in the U.S. I mean, people worry about the debt in Canada. I mean, it's nothing compared to the U.S. I mean, the U.S. has been, economy has been fueled by massive government spending and government expenditures. And so the Fed has been reluctant to lower rates. But on the other hand, you've got the private sector in the U.S., which is now showing strains. And you've got jobless claims that are moving up. For example, you've got, there are strains. So I think the Fed has to decide, does it want to wait for a recession before it cuts rates? Or does it want to do its best to start to ease conditions, monetary conditions, before a recession? And they've got to make that decision. And based off of their track record under Jerome Powell, I'm afraid they're going to wait until it's too late, because that has been his track record. He has had these, he waited too long in 2018 to lower rates, and then they had the repo crisis, and a recession started before COVID. And you look, I mean, the recession started, it was well underway. It was well, the weakness was well unfolding. And I think it would have happened without COVID. COVID obviously likely, it made it worse, but Jerome Powell stick-handled the economy right into a very weak corner right when COVID hit. Let's put it that way. And then, of course, we all know he left interest rates too low for too long when inflation was soaring. And not only that, they were also buying bonds. They were doing QE, you know, when inflation was soaring at 8%. You know, I believe that's right, or it was certainly soaring, you know, I'd have to go back and check the numbers. So my point being is that Jerome Powell has a very lousy track record on timing. And I know there's a lot of cheerleaders for Jerome Powell, but I'm not one of them. I'm sorry. I'm not a big fan of central planning when it comes to monetary policy or anything for that matter. But show me the goods, and Jerome Powell has showed me failure, two big failures, and the chances are he's going to engineer another failure. So I hope I'm wrong. I hope he proves me wrong. I really do. I'm cheering for him because, I think that they've got to make a tough choice, though. They've got to decide whether they're going to save their economy from a recession and accept a little bit more inflation, or whether they're going to potentially drive America and the West into a deflationary situation. So they get paid a lot of money too. So that's they get paid the big bucks for. So we'll have to just see what they decide this summer. I see Bill Dudley was in, he's the former New York Fed president. He was saying they should cut in July. Well, I wonder if that is him just doing his own thing, or whether there is more to that article than meets the eye. We will soon find out. The Fed is meeting at the end of July. We will see if they do a surprise rate cut. That would be well outside of their comfort zone. That would not fit with their central planning playbook. Their central planning playbook is to tell the market ahead of time what they're going to do and when, because they're very meticulous planners. And the thinking right now is they're going to tell the market, oh, well, we will cut in September. And the fact of the matter is a lot can happen in the world between now and September. I don't know if you've noticed, Jim, but there's a lot going on in the world. There's a lot, you know, surprises happen every week, whether it's in the Middle East, whether it's on the campaign trail, you know, whether it's in Europe, in Ukraine. There's a lot of things happen very quickly, unexpectedly, but the central planners in the Federal Reserve, they basically focus on their models, and they don't seem to recognize that the world can change very quickly, very fast, in very significant ways. So I don't know what they're going to do. It's a great question in terms of how it impacts Canada. You know, I've been neutral on the loonie for some time, but now I'm starting to get a little bit more bearish, unfortunately. I think the Canadian economy, you know, my disgust with the performance of our policymakers is, you know, reflects, I think, you know, the fact that I could see the Canadian economy underperforming the American economy now over some time. It may change if we get a change of government, but we're not going to get a change of government for over a year because, well, I don't know, the NDP seem to like this government. I don't know why. I don't know if it has anything to do with Jagmeet Singh's pension vest in February of 2025. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I just happen to know that his parliamentary pension vests sometime towards the end of February in 2025. So we'll see if the NDP decide that maybe they should pull the rug from the Trudeau government before then, but I'm not holding my breath for that.
Now, getting back to the BRICS 40% gold-backed currency, could you see Western countries banning sales of gold to the BRIC countries because of that to weaken their currency?
Well, isn't China the biggest gold producer in the world? So I don't know what purpose that would serve. You know, and I don't know how you would enforce that. I mean, okay, so you would, you know, if you say you can't sell it to the BRICS, you know, and again, and this is the other disturbing trend I see, is this confrontational politics that's dominating Western thinking right now. You know, there's no doubt that China is a very, very tough competitor, and they do a lot of practices that we think are wrong. Okay, and we have some justification for that. And however, that does not mean one has to go to war over things like that. It really means you need to double down on your diplomacy and your policy responses that are long-term and smart. And, you know, I think if we get a Trump administration in, that we may dial back some of the confrontational hysteria that is pervading Western discourse right now. Now, he will be very aggressive in his tactics in confronting countries like China, but the difference is, I believe, is ultimately that a Trump administration wants to get a deal done with a country like China, you know, for that, where both countries feel that they can live with the deal. Obviously, the Americans would want to think that they're going to get the better of the Chinese in any negotiation, and that's all fair game. But this constant ratcheting up of rhetoric and demonizing your trade competitors, you know, it's just not constructive, and it doesn't lead to a good outcome. And you know, that's so I would hope we do not get to that place. Look, I just saw an article from the RAND Corporation promoting conscription as a way to deal with societal divisions. You know, so there's a lot of very concerning ideas and narratives that are floating around, and I really hope that we can kind of do a reality check on this, and that we will all be better off if we can, you know, get agreements with our competitors as opposed to get into kinetic conflicts and sanctions. I mean, look at the sanctions that have been thrown into Russia, and the Russia economy is growing quite strongly. I mean, the one takeaway from this, the Ukraine war fiasco, and it's turning to be a fiasco because Ukraine is losing. I think that's pretty much understood now, even amongst the most optimistic Western media, that Ukraine is losing the war, and all the sanctions in the world did not help it. So, you know, and I believe Mr. Trump, I believe he said that in a recent interview or in the debate, that he's not a big fan of sanctions. He prefers tariffs. Okay. You know, I think the BRICS and the China, I think they would rather have that, because they can say, okay, what's your tariff? The tariff is whatever, 50%, 60%. I don't think they like it, but as opposed to sanctions, which are very hard to administer and lead to all sorts of uncertainty. And you know, Jim, if you it'd be great you get someone from the semiconductor industry on House Street and ask them how these sanctions are helping their business, you know, onto China, the China AI sanctions. They're very complex, and the risk of violating the sanctions as a domestic company alters your behavior in significant ways. Whereas if you're allowed to, you know, if you have some set rules that are clear cut, and I don't mean by sanctions, I mean penalty, like tariffs or, you know, export restrictions that are reasonable. And even export restrictions are very difficult just to administer. So I think Trump understands that, and whether he's able to execute on his plan if he gets elected, you know, we will have to see. But I do think we will be heading in a much more a more constructive economic path under a Trump administration, I would hope, than we are currently right now, which is a bit of chaos with sanctions and wars, and it's not a great environment, and it leads to questions like you just asked. What happens if we sanction gold miners? Well, why should a Canadian gold miner be sanctioned, for heaven's sakes, right? Like, we put all this money into the ground, take huge risks, and then we're going to have some government tell us where we can sell the gold. You know, I don't know. It's I don't think that's the formula. But again, you know, hopefully Canadians will get their heads around these issues. Maybe ask a few questions about the Ukraine war, how much money we've sent to Ukraine, and why the war was started, and why there was no peace deal in April of 2022. Why did we continue to fund and encourage the war when there was a peace deal on the table that would have saved hundreds of millions of dollars and thousands of lives? Why was that peace deal not proceed? You know, these are some important questions that really, I think, should be asked.
Ted, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Jim, have a great summer, the rest of the summer, and same to all your listeners, and we'll talk to you again soon.
My guest has been Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, his website, CanadianInsider.com. If you have any questions for Ted or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.